Dallas Peterson is extension weed science specialist, as am I. Dallas works in soybeans and wheat, and I work in corn and sorghum, but we both deal with the issue of glyphosate-resistant weeds. And so what I'm going to talk about today is a program that we put together to bring about the awareness of glyphosate-resistant weeds to our growers and ag industry. And I should say, when we talk about glyphosate-resistant weeds, it's just not as clear-cut. It's a little more foggy, okay, than some of the other resistant weed issues that we've had. Most of our previous resistant weeds, when they studied the inheritance, single gene, and you kind of either had it or you didn't. The glyphosate resistant, we believe, is multiple genes, and so we tend to see a rate creep. And that becomes a lot more difficult, in fact, to identify glyphosate resistance. So, setting up this emerging issue, Duke and Powell's reported that glyphosate has become the most widely used herbicide in the world. Why is that the case? Well, obviously the glyphosate-resistant crops and that acreage has continued to increase. The corn, soybeans, cotton, and there may be some others, okay? Glyphosate's easy to use, okay? Coupled with that, glyphosate prices have been falling dramatically. Okay, so you've got cheap glyphosate. It makes this program even better looking. Dan, in the first discussion, talked about high energy prices. That contributed as well. Seeing maybe more movement to less tillage, and what do? We substitute glyphosate for tillage. And so all of these things have contributed to why we've had a great increase in the use of glyphosate. Well, by increasing this use, we are dramatically increasing then the selection pressure on weeds from glyphosate. And sure enough, over time, we start hearing from growers that there are more and more weeds that are becoming more difficult to control with glyphosate. This is some history on the current development of glyphosate-resistant weeds. The first in 1996 was rigid ryegrass in Australia. Okay, shortly after that, in 97, goosegrass was identified in Malaysia. That's all way far away, right? We don't worry about that. But then marestail came along, or horseweed, and that was really the first one that smacked us pretty hard starting in 2000. And then we started to take notice, I think, of glyphosate-resistant weeds. And marestail, glyphosate-resistant marestail acreage has just continued to increase in the east, south, midwest, first documented in Kansas in 05. Common ragweed and giant ragweed were identified in 2004. Have the states listed there where that's been documented. In Kansas, we documented it in 2006, both common ragweed and giant ragweed. Then there's Palmer amaranth. And by golly, Palmer amaranth is a pigweed species, and I think the most competitive of the pigweed species. And it's the one that, in fact, in Kansas scares me the most. Now, you don't see Kansas in that Palmer amaranth list. That's because we extension specialists at this point have been doing a good job. Well, not really. Hasn't been identified. Okay. Water hemp, another pigweed species. Okay, identified in 2006. Then there's Johnson grass. That was one we hoped never to see. Okay. Again, 2006, found in Argentina, but that's a long ways away, right? But that didn't last long, because in 2007, a population was found in Arkansas, and I think there is a second small independent population also found. So there's at least two, I think, that I have heard rumors of. Okay.
Six.
Six. Okay, well, it's growing. All right. But that's a concern, huge concern. Then there are some other species that haven't officially been reported as glyphosate resistance. That one is common lamb's quarter, and in 2007, we're working with that in Ohio. We actually were looking at some common lamb's quarter in Kansas as well. In Kansas, we have been looking at kochia for the last couple of years, and another one that is kind of a difficult weed, and we have a number of different accessions from across western Kansas that is being evaluated for glyphosate resistance. So the objectives of this program that we'll be talking about first was to bring awareness of the glyphosate-resistant weeds, okay, to the growers and ag industry. And then secondly, and coupled with that, would be to bring the awareness of some of the management strategies of maybe slowing the development or, if you have it, how to deal with them, okay? And trying to get growers to put things in place when you don't have a problem, well, you guys are several of your extension specialists. That can be a real job. One of the tools that we used in this process is this turning technologies or turning point. And what we wanted to do was to try to bring our audience into the program a bit, make it interactive, and maybe they wouldn't fall asleep on us, okay? Because we really wanted to drive home some points. And so we handed out these turning point devices, and we reminded them not to ever put them in their pockets. It's a $60 bill that has no value to them. Can't use it as a calculator. It really is no good to them, but only to us with the turning point equipment. So, at our public meetings last winter, we talked about how you might identify glyphosate-resistant weeds, and we talked about several different factors about glyphosate-resistant weeds. We used this turning point system, put together a set of questions, again, to assess our audience's perspective and hopefully get a scope of the glyphosate-resistant weeds that we had in Kansas, okay? And then we had some questions that led into some open discussion of some management strategies. We're not going to have time today to cover all of the questions, okay? But we're going to hit a few. We're going to highlight a few as we go along. One of the first things that we had to do with our audience was to kind of get things squared away on what we're calling a glyphosate-resistant weed, okay? Because there are weed species in Kansas that we've never been able to kill with glyphosate, and we really weren't interested in, you know, prairie cup grass being an example, one we can't kill, okay? And we have some others, a number of our warm season grasses, tumble, windmill grass, et cetera, we just couldn't kill. We really were not talking about those weed species. The species that we were interested in getting feedback from were those species that at one point in time, with a given rate of glyphosate, they were able to control. And then as time has gone on, with that same rate, they no longer can. Okay. Now, you have to clarify that because if you got drought stress or some other adverse situations, you know, we don't get good weed control. But we're talking about good conditions, good coverage, and for some reason we just don't control the weed like we used to. That's the glyphosate-resistant weeds we're interested in. Again, not being clear-cut, this glyphosate resistance, because of the rate creep. Okay. I mean, if it would go instantly to a 10x or 100x, it's a lot easier to evaluate. Okay. So the first question we asked our audience, and total we had about 563 different respondents in a number of different meetings. About 85% of those we we're talking to were worried about glyphosate-resistant weeds. And I thought, already they're fairly aware. So the media has brought about the problem, and I think, you know, they're not living in a vacuum, and that's good. Then I asked, or then we asked, do you think you have glyphosate-resistant weeds? Okay. I had to make some clarifications at this point. When we were talking to growers in the audience, we're talking about your acres, your farm. When you're talking to consultants, we're talking the acres that you consult. If you're talking to co-op agronomists, we're talking about the people that they dealt with, or if they were spraying for folks, it's your acres, okay? And in some cases, you know, there were individuals that oversaw certain areas. Again, we were asking them, okay, this pertains to your area, okay? This was a little higher than I'd hoped to see, okay? In Kansas, this number of respondents, about 65% of them felt they had glyphosate-resistant weeds. Now, I hope we're overestimating, okay? And I think that's possible. You're right.
We didn't.
But we've got another set of meetings this winter, so any kind of input would be great.
Yeah. Just ask them, are they a grower? You can give
them an A. Right. You can give them an A, B, C, D. Right. Yep. Absolutely. Then we asked what percent of your fields then contain glyphosate-resistant weeds. So now all of a sudden we don't have the 500 and some responding. We've got that 65% that are responding. And over 50% said it was a low level, something less than 5%. I guess what concerned me is that we did have about 8% that said greater than 25% of their acres had glyphosate-resistant weeds, okay? And I still think this is an emerging issue in Kansas, not quite like some of the things that they're dealing with further east of us, okay? And we got specific about certain weed species. Mare's tail, again, you know, pretty widespread, probably the most popular glyphosate-resistant weed in Kansas. And in fact, about 60% of the respondents said they had or felt they had glyphosate-resistant mare's tail. That might not be too far from being reality. Then we did talk about some of the stuff that we've actually done in the greenhouse. We showed a couple of different accessions or a couple of different populations of mare's tail. But we also talked about how a pint didn't kill it, but it did the susceptible check. The quart rate didn't kill it, but we actually do see some injury on those small mare's tail. Quart and a half looks like it's going to do it. Well, we give them a little time, and in fact, the quart and a half did control the mare's tail. Okay, so we aren't seeing 10x or higher what has been reported in some locations, at least with these populations. But that use rate, the quart rate, was not controlling those two accessions. So that tells you why the growers were having problems. So we switched gears to water hemp, and about a third of our respondents said that they had glyphosate-resistant water hemp. Now, water hemp is going to be most common in about the eastern third of Kansas. So it's kind of unique that about a third of them responded that they had resistance. So I broke it out. We had meetings in the east half of the state, we had meetings in the west half of the state, and then we had meetings that included like co-op agronomists, consultants from across the entire state. Okay, and so sure enough, when we look at this breakout, we see a lot more resistant water hemp in the east half than in the west half, and that's exactly what we'd expected. And then we talked about Kevin Bradley's work in Missouri, who had gathered up accessions of the water hemp, actually one of these being on the Kansas line. We were told you could throw a rock from that field and it'd land in Kansas. So, you know, probably means we've got some of this stuff in Kansas. And looking at a dose response, well, by golly, even at 2 gallons, that's not as dead as we'd like water hemp. Okay, so, yeah, this showing to be quite resistant. Just another look. This is the use rate, the 3/4 pound acid equivalent of glyphosate, actually having an accession that he can control, having some moderate tolerance, and then having some with resistance, and you can see it's even moving into flowering. So it's going to be reproductive as well. This showing also something else that we commonly see when we're spraying resistant weeds. Even though all of these plants had uniform coverage, we see some that are completely dead, some that are doing quite well, and something that's in between. Okay, so clearly everything was sprayed. This was greenhouse work, so conditions were good, and we see a differential response from the weed. Moving into Palmer amaranth, and this has never been documented to Kansas. I'm not aware that anybody is working with a seed source. I might be mistaken. We do have from time to time companies working on stuff, and they don't always keep us informed, okay? But almost 40% or 38% felt that they had glyphosate-resistant Palmer amaranth. I hope they're wrong, okay? We also have encouraged growers that if they have a field that they strongly suspect it, give us a call. Get a hold of your local county agent. Let's get us out there so that we can gather some seed and do some evaluations. Neither Dallas nor I received any calls this summer. So, again, we haven't gathered any seed to evaluate Palmer amaranth, but Palmer can be a little tough to control. And so one of the first things that we talk about with Palmer amaranth is, you know, there's timely applications and then there's applications that aren't timely, okay? What's growing in that field? You can't tell me other than Palmer amaranth, right? So when they go out to spray that, are they going to be able to control that Palmer amaranth if it's glyphosate susceptible? You know, they'll kill most of that, but there's Palmer amaranth lower in that canopy that's never going to see glyphosate when you spray over the top of it. Again, coverage is an issue, so timeliness is important, okay? And that's a soybean field, and yields are already reduced, okay? We try to push that point home as well. A couple applications of glyphosate, by golly, there were beans in there, okay? But what's down here in the bottom of this slide? Mare's tail. Okay. Now, we also point out that when we're spraying big Palmer amaranth, it may be tougher to control. And if it is becoming glyphosate tolerant or resistant, we're more inclined to leave it behind to produce seed. And that's not a good deal. So timely application, I think, is really important, and especially with a weed like Palmer amaranth. This is Stanley Culpepper's slide from Georgia. And, yeah, they've got some Palmer amaranth issues in Georgia. I didn't bring the slide of his cotton field where I think it was almost the irrigation system was disappearing because of the tall Palmer amaranth, okay? You couldn't see cotton. But this is another point we want to bring out to growers. When we spray, and if we do have glyphosate resistance, we actually have Palmer amaranth here that are deader than doornail susceptible. And we have Palmer that are doing quite well. So they were all covered. So clearly there's a differential response between these two. This is what we're looking for. We try to tell growers, when you see this, get a hold of your agent. You know, get a hold of us. And we haven't been able to do that. Another species that we're interested in was kochia. And so we asked about kochia. Now, kochia is going to be more prevalent in Kansas in the western, I'd say, two-thirds of the state. Okay? And as you go west, it's even more prevalent. So I have it showing here, just broke out by the where we had our meetings. We did have 20% of the folks in the eastern half that said they had glyphosate-resistant kochia. This one concerned me a lot, to see 65% of the guys out west saying they had glyphosate resistance. Okay, kochia, if you got good growing conditions, you spray it timely, we've been able to do a pretty decent job, but it's becoming increasingly difficult to control. Okay, so we'd like to throw some other things in the tank. This is some work that we've been doing in the greenhouse with one of the accessions. Okay, and actually, the susceptible biotype, not killing it with a half rate or 11 ounces of Roundup Weather Max, but the full rate and on, doing a good job. But this other biotype, it's taking up to 44 ounces or 2x rate, and it looks like we've got a survivor. And if any of you are familiar with kochia, you know that once you've made that guy mad, then he is really difficult to control. Okay. But at higher rates, again, being able to control that kochia. And we have had a lot of issues, a lot of concerns, a lot of trips to the field regarding this weed species. And we start moving into some of the management type questions. Okay, and we asked in two questions, but I put this on the same slide. We asked the corn growers and we asked the soybean growers, and in some cases, guys had a chance to punch the button twice. Okay, but what percent of your corn or soybean acres are glyphosate tolerant? Okay, we didn't say Roundup Ready. We said glyphosate tolerant. Okay, and corn growers, about 40% of them, were almost exclusively glyphosate tolerant. Have to throw in almost another 30% that are 75% or more. So basically 70% of our corn growers are using an awful lot of glyphosate tolerant corn in their acres. Okay. Now soybeans, even a heavier supply of, and it doesn't surprise us, of the glyphosate tolerant. We've got about 82% that were exclusively glyphosate tolerant. You throw in another 8, that makes it about 90% of our soybean acres being glyphosate resistant. And I believe there's areas in the country that are even higher than these values, right? So we asked the corn growers, what percent of your corn acres receive a pre-emergence residual herbicide? Now, why would I ask that? Okay, we're talking about a management tool, and of course we don't talk about the management tools until they've answered the question. Otherwise, they're all going to answer it the way we want them to answer it. Okay. About 28% said that they were using a pre-emergence herbicide in all their acres. That's good, but also 23% of them probably exclusively glyphosate. Okay. Not using that pre-emergence. But, you know, there is a blend, and I think it probably has to do with the species that they're dealing with. You know, we have things like Morning Glory, and so, you know, they're going to have to throw some other things in there sometimes to get that species because they won't get it with glyphosate. Then we asked, okay, those of you that are growing Roundup Ready corn, do you tank mix something with the glyphosate? Okay, and again, about 25% of them said on more than 75% of their acres, they're putting something else in the tank. 27% said, nope, glyphosate alone. And as glyphosate gets cheaper, if they can just bump the glyphosate rate, because these anything they throw in the tank sometimes costs them more money, okay? Especially if they're, you know, using some of the new HPPD inhibitors or whatever that might help them out significantly, they're going to pay more money, okay? Now, the soybean folks. How many are using pre-emergence herbicides? About 15%. An awful lot of them, almost 60%, are exclusively glyphosate. It didn't surprise me, but it concerns me, okay? Are they mixing anything with glyphosate in a post program on glyphosate-resistant soybeans? Well, about 10% said they were. Again, almost 60% exclusively glyphosate. Again, from a management tool, being able to use something pre, being able to use something else in the tank that can help to control the glyphosate-resistant weed, or actually to do a better job controlling all weeds out there, we can delay the development of resistance. Okay, so these are a couple of important management strategies. What percent of glyphosate-treated fallow or burn down have a tank mix partner? And it was kind of good to see that at least 55% of them were, okay? Probably corn growers far more prevalent doing this than the cotton or the soybean guys, okay? Unless they go earlier. It depends on what they're dealing with. If they're dealing with glyphosate-resistant mare's tail, they're going to have to put something else in the tank with glyphosate, maybe in an early burn down, okay, to try to control that mare's tail. Still, you know, about 12% of them saying exclusively glyphosate. And again, that's probably just ahead of cotton, maybe ahead of soybean. Now we asked, what percent of your fields are rotated with a non-glyphosate tolerant crop? Okay, in Kansas, that's probably going to be rotated with grain sorghum, wheat, sunflowers. You know, there could be some other crops as well. About 33% said that three quarters or more of their acres are rotated. They're doing a good job. Okay. I guess what concerned me was almost a quarter of those are saying very little to none. And I think that's a real issue. I don't know if you remember that history slide that I showed on glyphosate resistance, and we talked about the two ragweed species, the water hemp, all identified in 2006 in the same grower's field, who was exclusively soybeans, glyphosate-resistant soybeans for many years. Bingo. Okay. So there's a group that we really need to work hard on. Okay. These guys need to be informed that if we continue this practice, okay, that it's going to get expensive. And so when you make that kind of comment, a lot of times they say, well, when it starts affecting me adversely, we'll change. Okay, as long as they can get by, they're going to get by. And glyphosate at $8 a gallon, they can do things cheap. They aren't going to change unless they have to. Okay, so we go through and talk and provide them with some written materials on glyphosate stewardship, on glyphosate-resistant weeds, and so forth, providing them with a handout to go along with the information we've provided in this meeting. Just to summarize, you know, the reality is glyphosate-resistant weeds are, in fact, an emerging issue. I see it only getting worse, okay? And at some point, try and tell these growers, it's going to be a negative impact, and it's going to cost you more. If we don't do something soon, you know, it's going to get expensive. Well, despite the very large number of folks that were worried about glyphosate-resistant weeds, boy, there's a lot of room for improvement on management strategies that are being implemented out there. Soybean growers just seem to be a little slower to adopt these management strategies than our corn growers have. And I guess, you know, I would say, and since I work with corn, I'm probably a little biased, but we do have a lot of new options in corn to help us out. You know, probably much better off than soybean growers have. I mean, we have a lot more options in corn. And again, I'd reiterate the comment that I hear more than I'd like to hear, that, you know, changes will be made when the profits are hurt. Okay, when it starts to squeeze the pocketbook, they'll do something different. And until then, they probably aren't going to. Now, there's some that may, okay? And again, I think some of our corn growers, because they do have opportunity, the options are out there, will do a better job. Any questions? I don't know what we got for time.
We're into our break, but I think if people have to leave, that's great. If now we have questions, and the other speakers are here as well. So.
You're welcome.
Curtis, when did you start pounding the message, guys, this wheels are not confidence? When did you start? Because what you documented here is indeed what is basically the situation right now, and you see problems. When we talk about emerging issues, one of the charges that we have is wise enough to say, guys, this is going to be a problem. When did you start doing this?
Well, you know, we had light discussion beginning, I would say, in 2000, when the mare's tail issue started to hit, okay? And we intensified that when we found it in Kansas in 2005. In 2006, when we stumbled into this boy that had giant ragweed, common ragweed, mare's tail, water hemp. It's like, whoa. You know, we've got it. It's just a matter of finding it or having people approaching us saying that they've got a problem. And so I'd say from 2006 and on, we have been beating the drum fairly hard. Last winter was really the first time that we had our hands on this turning point technology to be able to get some of these perceptions, and so this was basically a method to try to, you know, get some of these points across. But we have been out there beating the bushes some, and I think, you know, the fact that 85% of the folks were concerned that of glyphosate-resistant weeds, you know, has in part been due to some of the previous efforts that we've had. Oh, sure. Absolutely. Because, you know, and especially as we're seeing glyphosate prices just falling out of the sky, and then people call us up and say, you know, we're going to spray fallow. Would it be okay if I just, you know, put another pint of 2,4-D, or put another pint of glyphosate in and left the Banvil out? You know, it's like, well, not from a standpoint of resistant weeds and not from the standpoint of resistant kochia, you know.